Hey guys, this is Vyom Joshi with Superior North. Welcome back to my channel. Today we will be talking about the world's largest gold mining company. That company is Newmont Corporation. Today we will be reviewing Newmont's business model, its operating segments and business products. We will be reviewing the company's key ratios, performing a discounted free cash flow DCF analysis to find the intrinsic value of the company, and finally do an expected rate of return calculation to see if we were to invest in this company at the current stock price, what kind of return can we expect on this investment? So let's dive in and review Newmont Corporation.
Hey guys, let's start off by looking at the Form 10-K, which is the annual report that Newmont Corporation filed with the SEC. This is for the fiscal year that ended December 31st, 2020. And on page 7 of the report, the company provides a business overview. It states that Newmont Corporation is primarily a gold producer with significant operations and or assets in the United States, Canada, Mexico, Dominican Republic, Peru, Suriname, Argentina, Chile, Australia, and Ghana. Newmont also engages in the production of copper, silver, lead, and zinc. Newmont was incorporated in 1921, so in 2021 it is completing its 100th year as the world's leading gold company. After that, the company provides segment information. It states that its operations are organized in 5 geographic regions: North America, South America, Australia, Africa, and Nevada. The company then talks about its products, the first one being gold. It states that of its 2020 consolidated gold production, approximately 25% came from North America, 17% from South America, 20% from Australia, 15% from Africa, and 23% from Nevada. For the year 2020, 90% of its sales were attributable to gold. On the next page, the company talks about its other co-products, the first one being copper. It states that for the year 2020, 1% of its sales was attributable to copper, and all of its 2020 copper production came from Australia. The second one is silver, where it says that for the year 2020, 5% of its sales was attributable to silver, and all of its 2020 production came from North America. Third one is lead. For the year 2020, 1% of its sales was attributable to lead, and all of its 2020 lead production came from North America. And lastly, zinc. For the year 2020, 3% of its sales was attributable to zinc, and all of its zinc production came from North America. Now finally, let's look at the company's long-lived assets and where they're located. On page 132 of the report, the company provides an overview of its long-lived assets. Long-lived assets primarily consist of property, plant, and mining development, net and non-current stockpiles, and ore on leach pads. When we compare the long-lived assets for each geographic region to the total, we can see that 29% of the company's long-lived assets are located in the United States. Now that we have a brief overview of Newmont's business, its operating segments, and the products it sells, let's review the company's fundamentals by analyzing its key ratios. Hey guys, now let's look at Newmont's key ratios. I'm on Morningstar looking at Newmont Corporation. Under key ratios, we have the financials. The first item on the list is the revenue. The revenue is the top line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that the company makes from its sales. Back in 2011, the company's revenue was about $10.3 billion. In 2016, it had dropped down to $6.7 billion, and then it rose back up in 2020 to about $11.5 billion. When we look at the past 10-year trend, we can clearly see the cyclicality in the business. This makes sense because the price of gold determines the company's revenue. In other words, when the gold prices are high, the company is going to make a lot of revenue. And when the gold prices are low, the company is not going to make as much revenue. Next is the operating income. The operating income is the amount of money that's left with the company once it has paid for the cost of goods and operating expenses. Back in 2011, the company's operating income was about $4.1 billion. And for the year 2020, it was about $2.9 billion. We can see that every year for the past 10 years, the company's operating income has been positive. After that, looking at the net income is the bottom line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that's left with the company once it has paid for the cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes. Back in 2011, the company's net income was about $366 million, and for the year 2020, it was about $2.8 billion. When we look at the past 10-year trend, we can see that there were 3 years when the net income was negative. That is, back in 2013, 2016, and 2017, the company reported a loss. The losses should not be surprising because Newmont's profitability truly depends on the gold prices. The years when the gold prices are high, the company is going to be profitable, and when it's low, it is going to struggle to show a profit. The company inherently does not have a moat or a competitive advantage. It is dependent on the gold demand and gold prices in order to be profitable. Next, looking at the dividends per share. Back in 2011, the company paid $1 per share as dividend, and for the year 2020, it paid about $1.04 per share as dividend. It is Newmont's policy to pay somewhere between 40 and 60% of its net attributable cash to its shareholders, which is why in some of the years we see that the dividends have dropped off, because the dividends are going to be dependent on how much cash the company is able to generate in that calendar year. So in the years when the company is making more money and generating more cash, it is going to pay more money out to its shareholders in the form of dividends, which is why the company's business model is considered shareholder friendly. Next, looking at the shares outstanding. Back in 2011, Newmont had about 504 million shares outstanding. The share count dropped down to about 498 million shares back in 2011, and then it rose all the way up to about 806 million shares in 2020. We can see that the shares outstanding number has been increasing ever since 2013. Ideally, we want to see the company's shares outstanding number to be staying steady or decreasing, as that means that the company is buying back its shares and increasing the existing shareholders' ownership within the company. An increasing shares outstanding number indicates that the company is diluting the existing shareholders' ownership within the company, and more importantly, it is doing equity financing. In other words, rather than taking on debt, it is issuing more shares so that it can generate cash to reinvest in other aspects of its business. Next, look at the book value per share. The book value is what we get when we subtract the company's total liabilities from its total assets. Back in 2011, Newmont's book value was about $28.3 per share, and for the trailing 12 months, it's at $28.75 per share. Over the past 10 years, the company's book value has mostly stayed in the $20 range. Finally, looking at the free cash flow. The free cash flow is what we get when we subtract the company's capital spending from its operating cash flow. Back in 2011, Newmont's free cash flow was $797 million, and for the year 2020, it's about $3.58 billion. Over the past 10 years, the company's free cash flow was negative back in 2012 and 2013, primarily because its capital spending exceeded its operating cash flow. I will be using the past 10 years of free cash flow for my expected rate of return calculation, and I will be using the 2020 figure of $3.58 billion for my discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Now let's look at the profitability of the company, focusing on the net margin. The net margin compares the company's bottom line to its top line, so it compares the company's net income to its revenue. Back in 2011, the company's net margin was 3.53%, and for the year 2020, it was 24.61%. What this means is every $100 that the company made in sales in 2020, by the time it paid for its cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligation, and taxes, it had $24.61 left as pure profit. The net margin for the year 2013, 2016, and 2017 was negative because the company reported a loss in those calendar years. Next, looking at the return on equity. The return on equity compares the company's net income to its shareholders' equity. Warren Buffett prefers to only invest in securities who had a return on equity of 8% or greater every year for the past 10 years. In 2011, Newmont's return on equity was about 2.79%, and for the year 2020, it was 12.74%. Newmont's return on equity has been greater than 8% for only 3 out of the past 10 years, that is, in 2012, 2019, and 2020. After that, looking at the return on invested capital, this number gives an idea of how good the management is at investing the company's capital and getting a return on that investment. Back in 2011, the company's return on invested capital was about 3%, and for the year 2020, it was about 10.5%. Newmont's weighted average cost of capital right now is about 3%. In other words, that is the hurdle rate that the management has to beat in order to create shareholder value. So in 2020, the fact that the company had a return on invested capital of about 10.5% shows that the company's management created shareholder value in that calendar year. Finally, looking at the interest coverage. The interest coverage compares the company's income to its interest obligations, so it gives us an idea of how many times can the company pay off its interest obligations in a calendar year. Benjamin Graham preferred to only invest in securities who had interest coverage of 5 times or higher. Back in 2011, the company's interest coverage was about 8.41 times, and for the year 2020, it was about 11.2 times. Next, looking at the financial health of the company, focusing on the liquidity ratios. The first item on the list is the current ratio. The current ratio compares the company's current assets to its current liabilities. Ideally, we want to invest in companies who have a current ratio of greater than 1. It's even better if it's greater than 1.5, as that indicates that the company has more than enough current assets to fulfill its current liabilities. Back in 2011, the company's current ratio was at 1.37, and for the year 2020, it was 2.52. Next is the quick ratio. The quick ratio is similar to the current ratio, except we disregard the inventory component. In other words, quick ratio is equal to current assets minus inventory divided by current liabilities. Ideally, we want to see the company's quick ratio to be greater than 1, as that means that the company does not have to rely on selling its inventory in order to stay liquid. Back in 2011, the company's quick ratio was at 0.83, and for the year 2020, it's at 1.86. Next, looking at the financial leverage. The financial leverage compares the company's total assets to its shareholders' equity. The higher the financial leverage indicates that more of the company's assets are financed via liabilities. Back in 2011, the company's financial leverage was at 2.13, and for the year 2020, it's about 1.80. Over the past 10 years, the company's financial leverage has stayed fairly stable. In fact, over the recent years, the company's financial leverage has been decreasing, which is certainly something we want to see in a company. Finally, looking at the debt-to-equity ratio, this ratio compares the company's total debt to its shareholders' equity. Ideally, we want to invest in companies whose debt-to-equity ratio is 1.0 or less. It's even better if it's less than 0.5. Back in 2011, Newmont's debt-to-equity ratio was at 0.28, and for the year 2020, it was at 0.27. All these four liquidity and financial health ratios are comparable to its competitors such as Barrick's Gold. Next, looking at the efficiency ratios, the first item on the list is the day sales outstanding. This number gives us an idea of how many days go by from the day the company recognizes its sales to the day it actually receives cash for that service rendered. Back in 2011, Newmont's day sales outstanding was at 21.18 days, and for the year 2020, it's about 13 days. In other words, it takes Newmont 13 days from the day it recognizes its sales to the day it actually receives cash for that service. Ideally, we want to see the company's day sales outstanding number to be staying steady or decreasing. However, in Newmont's case, the day sales outstanding number has been increasing since 2017. This means that the company is being aggressive with its revenue recognition tactics. In other words, the company may be reporting a little bit inflated revenue numbers to pretty up its income statement. Next, looking at the day's inventory, this number gives an idea of how many days does Newmont's products sit in its inventory before they are sold. Back in 2011, the company's day's inventory was about 86 days, and for the year 2020, it's about 48 days. Ever since 2016, the company's day's inventory number has hovered between 40 and 50 days. Next, looking at the payables period, this number gives an idea of how many days does Newmont take to pay its suppliers. Back in 2011, the company took about 43 days to pay its suppliers, and for the year 2020, it took about 25 days to pay its suppliers. Ideally, we want to see the payables period to be fairly stable, and that has been the case with Newmont, as the payables period has hovered between 20 and 30 days since 2014. Finally, looking at the inventory turnover, the inventory turnover gives us an idea of how many times does Newmont's inventory go through its system in a calendar year. Back in 2011, the company's inventory turnover was about 4.26 times, and for the year 2020, it's about 7.58 times. A higher inventory turnover number indicates that the company is being efficient with its inventory and going through more of its inventory in that calendar year. The company's inventory turnover has hovered between 7 and 8 times since 2016. Now let's compare the company's current valuations to that of the S&P 500. The S&P 500 is the aggregate of the top 500 companies in the United States. The first item on the list is the price-to-earnings ratio. Newmont's price to earnings is at 17.8, whereas S&P 500 is at 27.9. Next is price to book. Newmont's price to book is at 2.1, whereas S&P 500 is at 4.0. After that, price to sales. Newmont is at 4.1, whereas S&P 500 is at 2.9. Next is price to cash flow. Newmont is at 9.7, whereas S&P 500 is at 16.3. And finally, dividend yield. Newmont's dividend yield is at 2.5%, whereas S&P 500 is at 1.6%. So on all these valuation metrics, other than the price-to-sales ratio, Newmont is undervalued when compared to the S&P 500. Hey guys, now let's look at the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis for Newmont. Over here, I based the 2020 free cash flow number that I got from Morningstar, which is at $3.58 billion. I'm using the annual growth rate of free cash flow to be 3%. What this means is I expect Newmont's free cash flow to grow at 3% every year for the next 10 years. I'm using a discount rate of 10%. What this means is I expect this investment to give me a 10% return. Next is the long-term growth rate, which I'm assuming to be 2%. What this means is I expect Newmont's free cash flow to grow at 2% every year from the 10-year mark into perpetuity. The company has 806 million shares outstanding and has a long-term debt of $5.48 billion. After taking all of these inputs into account, we get the intrinsic value per share to be about $52.17. When we compare this intrinsic value to the current stock price of about $59 per share, we can see that the current stock price is trading about 13% above the company's intrinsic value. The way we calculate this intrinsic value is we look at what the free cash flows would be every year for the next 10 years. We sum up all those free cash flows, which come out to about $25.4 billion. Then we look at what the free cash flows would be from the 10-year mark into perpetuity. We sum all those up and get the intrinsic value to be about $47.5 billion. From this number, we subtract the long-term debt and divide by the shares outstanding to get the intrinsic value per share to be about $52.17 per share. Now, if we disregard the perpetuity component, in other words, if we think that Newmont's free cash flow will only grow for the next 10 years and then the company will cease to exist, then we get the intrinsic value without the perpetuity to be about $25 per share. And if we disregard the debt and the perpetuity, then we get the intrinsic value without the debt and perpetuity to be about $31.5 per share. Finally, if we drop the discount rate to 9%, in other words, if we're fine with getting a 9% return on the investment, then we get the intrinsic value to be about $60.9 per share, which is in line with the company's current stock price. And if we drop the discount rate even further to 8%, then we get the intrinsic value to be about $72.57 per share, which shows that the current stock price is actually trading about 20% below the company's intrinsic value. Hey guys, now let's look at Newmont's expected rate of return calculation. Over here, I pasted the past 10 years of free cash flows that I got from Morningstar. All the numbers here are in millions of US dollars. This is the yearly free cash flow trend that we get over the years. The free cash flows have been positive since 2014, and we can clearly see the cyclicality in the company's free cash flow. Next, looking at the future data and predictions, I'm assuming that there's a 35% likelihood that Newmont's free cash flow will grow at 5%. There's a 50% likelihood that its free cash flow will grow at 2%. And a 15% likelihood that its free cash flow will decline at 5%. These are the potential free cash flow rates that we get into the future. After taking into account the numbers of shares outstanding, which is at 806 million shares, at the current stock price of about $59 per share, the expected rate of return comes out to about 6.9%. What this means is if we were to purchase a share of Newmont at the current stock price of about $59 per share and hold the security through 2045, then annually we can expect to get a return of about 6.9% on this investment. Hey guys, now let's wrap it all up. We got a brief overview of Newmont's business, its operating segments, and its business products. The company's revenue, operating income, and net income has been cyclical over the past 10 years. In other words, the company's profitability is truly dependent on the demand and prices of gold. The years when the gold prices are high, the company is more profitable, and when it's low, it is not as profitable. Newmont pays out between 40 and 60% of its yearly attributable cash to its shareholders in the form of dividends, so its dividend policy is certainly shareholder-friendly. Newmont's return on equity was about 13% in 2020, and its return on invested capital was greater than its cost of capital, which shows that the management is creating value for its shareholders. Newmont's interest coverage was greater than 5 times in 2020, which shows that the company is not in a bind and is not struggling to pay interest on its debt obligations. Next, we looked at the financial health of the company and saw that the company's quick and current ratio show that the company is liquid enough to survive for another 12 months. Newmont's financial leverage and debt-to-equity ratio has been stable over the past 10 years, and those numbers are comparable to its competitors such as Barrick's Gold. When we looked at Newmont's efficiency ratios, we saw that the company is more efficient with its inventory now than it was 10 years ago. We also saw that the company's day sales outstanding number have been increasing over the past few years, which means that the company is more aggressive at recognizing its revenue, which artificially inflates the company's income numbers. After that, we compared Newmont's current valuation to that of the S&P 500 and saw that on 4 of the 5 valuation metrics, Newmont is undervalued to the S&P 500. When we performed the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis using a 10% discount rate, the intrinsic value came out to about $52 per share, which would mean that the current stock is trading about 13% above the company's intrinsic value. However, when we dropped the discount rate to 8%, we got the intrinsic value to be about $73 per share, which would mean that the current stock is trading about 20% below the company's intrinsic value. After that, when we performed the expected rate of return calculation, we found out that if we were to purchase the security at about $59 per share and hold this through 2045, we can expect to get a return of about 6.9% annually on this investment. In conclusion, Newmont's profitability truly depends on the gold prices. Gold is a hedge against inflation, local currency, and acts as a safe haven when it comes to times of uncertainty. So if you're afraid of inflation or devaluation of US dollar or bullish on Bitcoin, Newmont may be a good bet. Newmont is a productive asset. It has a margin of safety. We're able to calculate its intrinsic value. It provides a similar hedge against US dollar as Bitcoin and is not as speculative as Bitcoin. In short, Newmont has solid fundamentals and is likely to provide good diversification in one's portfolio. Hey guys, that is all I had for you this week. Hopefully you found this video on Newmont interesting. If you like this content, please do like, share, comment, and subscribe. And if you have any suggestions as to which stock I should review next, please leave it in the comment section below. I will greatly appreciate it. Thank you.